Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today you are tuning in to Spell It Out, Magic Reflections and Shadows, where I take a topic and run with it. Today, I'm going to seek to respond to a question that I am frequently asked because I am a tarot card reader for a living, and that is, Krista, what tarot books do you recommend? And it's not going to be simply a book list, so stay tuned. But before we get started, Michael has a few announcements.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our show. It's really great to have you, as always. We've got some really cool stuff coming up this month. And next week, we've been getting a lot of questions about some of the ethics of reading and what works, what doesn't work, what you should and shouldn't do, and even when it comes to finding a good reader. So we're going to do our own show next week. We're going to talk about the ethics of intuitive reading, and so that should be a lot of fun. The following week, we've got our good friend Dan Moore coming back, and he's going to be doing a tarot on the show on the esoteric meaning of the lover's card in the tarot. So lots of tarot stuff this month, so you guys that are into that, tune in for sure. And then the end of the month, we have our gals from Haunted History BC coming back. They've just launched a new paranormal journal or magazine, and they're going to be talking about that. And then just to look ahead quickly, 25th of July, mark that one on your calendars. It's going to be our first two-hour UFO special. Our good friend Matt Apsher will be back to co-host, and we're going to have our author friend Preston Dennett back. We're going to have Dolly Safran, who is a contactee, and Earl Anderson, who is the Southern California director of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. So going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to do 2 hours on that one from 1 until 3. So get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-A-X-T-H, all spelled out. And while you're there, if you can afford to, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi. Really helps. But the best thing you can do is click over to YouTube or our podcast and click like and subscribe, and that really helps tremendously. And it makes us very happy to see that our audience is growing too. So with that, I'm going to kick it back to Krista because we have a short episode today. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael. And I just wanted to add that the Haunted History BC, this is going to be volume 2 of their relatively new journal they've launched. And I think it's the first Canadian one, which is kind of excited. And I'm also really thrilled about the two-hour UFO that's coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, a shout out to Mac. Hi, thanks for tuning in. And I'm going to get started. So when I was asked this question again recently, because I'm asked it frequently, what tarot books do I recommend? At first, I started thinking about, well, you know, what books would I recommend this particular person who I know is a very intelligent and knows about readings and things like that? And so then I started thinking about something else. My approach to tarot included and still includes reading, but it's really more of an approach that I feel has giving me a depth and also has kept the tarot very interesting for me. So when I first started reading tarot in the late 90s, I did read a lot of sort of how-to books, and I was a little discouraged actually, because what I found was, at least with the modern books, there was a lot of repetition. And this was before Michael and I had discovered Kabbalah and started using it. So I was a little bit, you know, sort of like disappointed because I wanted to get sort of variety. So you're not going to see, to me, in a lot of the books on how to do tarot and this card means that in the modern world, a lot of difference. So maybe because of that and because I am an avid reader, I just enjoy reading in general. Michael will tell you I'm always reading a book of some kind. I started to change my approach to the tarot kind of gradually. And in fact, I didn't really think about it until I started looking at this question. And basically, from a very early start, I really was intrigued by the tarot as a tool and as a teacher. So it's true that the tarot itself teaches you, but maybe not in ways people expect. I mean, there is, we'll talk about sort of a more magical way that tarot can reach you, but what it does, if you gaze a lot at the imagery, and I want to recommend that you start with a tarot type deck. And these are decks that come out of the lineage of the tarot starting in the late or maybe mid-1400s through, I would say, even like the 1930s in choosing a deck. And the reason being is because those decks in general are very thought out symbolically and consistently. And they're different, you know, if you pick up the Marseille deck versus Aleister Crowley's deck, but they are thought out. And really there's this element of with the art that has some theory in it. And that's another thing I believe tarot is, it's sort of a combination of art and theory. And so that would be the first thing I would sort of suggest. And then the way you can approach it is through, first of all, you can approach it through your interests. And my interests when I started getting into tarot, after a while, I wanted to know about the history of tarot. And I wanted to know its origins, because there's, you know, the mythical origins and what's the real history. And at the time, there weren't a lot of books on the history that were, you know, like researched historically. And there was one written by a playing card historian, Michael Dumet, who is a little controversial because he doesn't really believe in necessarily using the tarot deck as an occult deck. But he's a good researcher, so if you can kind of take away his bias. And there's a book called A Wicked Pack of Cards, which is a great title, at the time was out of print. And that alone was a journey. I found a copy of it like after a year and a half that was affordable, a hardback copy. And I think it's back in print, or it was at one point, you know. And there's some other books too that are actually really good. One that includes his name. So I started thinking like, well, I want to get to know the tarot as you would a friend. So you can see the tarot as a friend, as a teacher, and you're going to want to get to know things about them. And so you might want to know their story. What is their history? Where were they born? You know, what were their influences? Just similar to a person. That's always been my sort of approach to the tarot, is I just want to get to know you more. And because I have a very curious mind, I like to follow my curiosity and hunches. It's interesting where it leads you. And it's taken me down all kinds of journeys with the tarot into areas I might not have explored. So ultimately, I do think the tarot is the actual teacher, but more in that indirect way for me. So then I started, you know, looking at its history. I got drawn into a particular period. And honestly, there is no right or wrong way about this. I think whatever draws you in to the tarot, maybe it's going to be the very beginning history, which is fascinating. Maybe it's going to be when the Marseille deck came out. For me, it was that what I call the Renaissance of the tarot, where you had all the magical societies that embraced the tarot and used the tarot and evolved it into something really interesting for me. So I was drawn into the Golden Dawn period and Aleister Crowley and even Paul Foster Case, which goes into the 1930s. Within that cycle, I mean, you could spend a lifetime, honestly, studying that period for so many reasons. It's so interesting esoterically. And so that was where it took me. But I did want to recommend, besides A Wicked Pack of Cards, if you want to learn a little more of the esoteric history, there's also A History of the Occult Tarot from 1870 to 1970 by Ronald Deckard and Michael Dumet. And then Ronald Decker has another book, The Esoteric Tarot, which I really enjoyed too. So I think that that's, you know, certainly sort of pointed history books that you can read. You can also read the history of the periods. And that's something I mean to do, so that you get a sense of where the tarot is coming from during that particular time. So if you were to go in and look at, you know, sort of the Italian history and French history and just general history, but you can also look, of course, at magical history. For instance, I do have this book, Eliphas Levi and the French Occult Revival by Christopher McIntosh. And so what you begin to see is there are these schools of tarot, which I've often thought would be interesting to try and organize: the French school, the British school, the modern school. And they have different influences. And then you can start seeing who was influenced by who. And that to me is probably easier now than when I was doing it, We didn't have like Mary Greer's timeline. We didn't have a lot of the history that's available that's really legitimate researched history that will help you sort of break down the different periods and the order. It's one of my goals is to collect books from as much as possible from the different periods. And I had this idea that I would just read them in order. And I have not done the order part, but I have started reading, picking books from the periods that I feel I'm interested in at the time. And it's always relevant to what I'm thinking about. And I'll share a little bit about something I read recently too. So think about, that's one way of looking at the tarot and getting to know it. And so your relationship will start to deepen with the tarot. And what happens as you deepen any relationship, the tarot starts to open up to you personally more. And that's an idea I came across recently in Oswald Wirth's book, The Tarot of Magicians, but also in The Painted Caravan, which I've had for years. And it's a book that's supposed to be based on gypsy lore and tarot. The idea that the study of the tarot it is not just this intellectual thing, but that it will start to respond to you according to, first of all, your intentions. Like, I do think if you have an open heart and a real curiosity, the tarot will want to talk to you. And then also, it takes time, just like any relationship. That's why go ahead and try and read those books like, these three cards together mean this. It's not a tarot thing. The tarot doesn't work like that. Even in our system, we don't do something like that. We don't tell you if the seven is next to the two and the queen, it means this. It's not really the appropriate use of the tarot, because if you look at any of the earlier esoteric books on, and even you could argue the original tarot, it's definitely a symbolic language. And symbolism is not something that you can approach by just saying this card means this or this symbol means that. It's a very dynamic system. So that's maybe my second point, is that any way in which you can study symbolism, whether you do it directly with the tarot, like you take a card and you look at the symbols in the card and you think about what they mean, you can research what they might mean on a universal level, because the tarot does seem to have the intention of being universal. Think about the fool and the tricksters in many mythologies. And so we have these, so you can look into the different cultural ideas about it. But also when you're looking at particularly the pip cards that have pictures, which by the way were added, they were not in the original tarot, you'd never really want to see them literally. It's really the worst mistake that modern tarot, some modern people make, and it's not in the older books. That's what's so interesting. It really is a modern thing. And the other thing that's modern, which I did not realize until recently, is the idea that you are not supposed to use the tarot as divination, that's a lower form. Well, by the way, I just read in Tarot of Magicians, Oswald Wirth's book, who, by the way, influenced Aleister Crowley, Pappus, and was evidently a great French Freemason. He embraces the divinatory part completely. And it kind of blew me away. Here's what he says, his one quote about divination. Divination is the mother of all our knowledges, all our philosophies, and of all our religions. It is worthy of respect. It is worthy of respect and deserves to be taken seriously. One must divine in order to understand and acquire the clairvoyance of which the narrow rationalist in his blindness deprives himself. This rationalist runs the risk of assuming the heavy gait of a learned beast. I like that last line. And I mean, I wasn't sure. Maybe I thought maybe they did look down on some of those because they were Freemasons and magicians practicing to meet the holy guardian angel. And that's just not true. And I have read in several books that are more like studied look at the tarot, like, oh, it was never designed for this. And I thought, yes, it was. Or at least some of the older people that really added to the symbolism and the knowledge of the tarot, they think it's perfectly fine to do that. But it was really kind of blown away that Wirth actually comes out and says it's actually important to do it, and it's a necessary thing. So that's what you get when you start reading in the tarot too. You get these little tidbits, you know. For a while there, I would say I was a bit of a tarot snob because Michael and I both thought that the interpretations of many of the cards were very tired and the same old interpretation. It's not been evolved. Like you can see this, the evolution of things in numerology sometimes, and even astrology has a different view of Saturn now sometimes, but you don't really see that in modern tarot books. And one way you can test it, we always do this, is if you pick up a book and you look at either the Tower or the Nine of Swords, and you'll see if it's the same definition, I say don't read the book. So, but I will say what I did find interesting was to go back as part of what I would recommend for reading is that you go back and read the books that were created with the decks. And I would start with the older decks. So for instance, I would read, if you have a Rider-Waite-Smith deck, you would pick up Arthur Waite's book, A Pictorial Key to the Tarot. And there are some great tidbits in that book just about divination or something esoteric. And you would at least want to read those, even if you completely disagree with the interpretations. I always recommend the Book of Thoth for Aleister Crowley, even if you don't use the Thoth deck, but definitely if you use it. And please, you know, we've talked about this before when we talked about the Book of Thoth on one of our shows. Don't be intimidated by the language if you're not familiar with magical language or Aleister Crowley style. You're still going to get something from that book. And as I said before on another show, that Lon Milo Duquette, who we really love, he's been on the show and he's an expert on Aleister Crowley's deck and a great person and magician too. He says, you know, read it once a year. And there's something to that. You know, there's something... One of my favorite things I got from that book was where he talks about, Aleister Crowley talks about the cards being living beings. And that leads me to another way of studying them, is that if you see the cards as these windows also to other worlds or as living beings, particularly if they are a figure like the Fool or the Hermit, you can definitely invoke them into your life. I've had several occasions where I've been working with a card where it seems like a person representing that energy appears in my life. And my favorite was, I've talked about this before, is the Fool. I was doing some work with the Fool. And by the way, I was just kind of making up my own thing about it. I wasn't really following a particular school at the time, mystery school. And I was working at the Bodhi Tree bookstore when I was ringing people up at the time. I was a clerk there. And somebody came up to the register with short blonde hair, like the Waite Fool, and had a ring on, and it was the Joker, and had the same energy you would think the Fool would have, had this kind of light, airy, humorous energy. And I remember watching the whole scene like, is this even happening? So it gets a little strange, I think, when you start to work with the cards that way. What else? The other books I would recommend. Well, I mean, even though I don't know if there's an original book with the Tarot of Marseille, but I did come across a book. Let me see, where was my notes about the different books? No, not that one. Oh, here it is. The Marseille Deck Revealed by Yov Bendov. He reconstructed and redid the art of the Marseille deck. And I think he used 9 different versions because there's different versions of it. And it's a beautiful version. And I did decide, because I liked that he took his time to do that, he seemed to really want to keep the authenticity of the original deck, but make it more visually stunning, because the original one's kind of funky, at least I think so. And his book is really cool, and it's a different style of working with the tarot because it's not Kabbalistic. And so I think reading something like that, something thought out by someone that's worked with a particular deck and you feel has some authority, is another way to do it. There's, in terms of history books, there was one other one I wanted to say is Secrets of the Waite-Smith Tarot by Marcus Katz and Tally Goodwin. That one has some really great stories about the different cards and how they came to be and the details in the card, including who the Queen of Wands really was in Pamela Coleman Smith's life. And I think the cat in the Queen of Wands was a real cat. And so that one's a really great one if you're, you know, you really want to see more about the history of that deck. And there's some other books that are connected to Pamela Coleman Smith. She's been given a lot more attention, I would say, in the last 10 years, and people are really honoring her contribution to the tarot, because she didn't get paid much, and she died, I think, poor as well. So she didn't really receive a lot of accolades in her own life for one of the most, I would say, at least transforming decks. What else? So the other thing that I found is you can approach in terms of what other books to read is, of course, the tarot obviously has numbers in it. And even if you don't, you know, believe in the Kabbalistic idea, which we do, so let's say you don't embrace that, you can study the numbers. And so numerology can become an interesting way to approach the tarot and studying that and then applying that to what you understand with the tarot. Obviously, if you are like us and you decide to embrace the idea that the Kabbalah is connected to the tarot, it gives you a wealth of information to study, which can be absolutely overwhelming. So I would say there were two things I wanted to say about studying Kabbalah. It's not a bad idea to actually read a book that looks at the history of Kabbalah, but I did that later on. And I found it really by chance. It was a free book at the Mystic Journey bookstore. And it's called here, let's see, it's called Kabbalah. Where did I put that one? Here it is. Kabbalah, Secrecy, Scandal, and the Soul. And it's by a real scholar, Harry Friedman. It is such a good book. I loved it. And it made me realize that the Kabbalah has been constantly changing, and it's not a static thing too. And this is from a scholarly view. So if you want to see a little more of the, just sort of how the Kabbalah came to be and its evolution, I totally recommend that book. So far, my favorite book that's Hermetic Kabbalah and Occult Kabbalah is The Mystical Kabbalah by D.N. Fortune. I know there are other great ones out there, but I return to that. I have, I think, some kind of intense connection to Dion Fortune, maybe because as part of my suggestion of learning the tarot, learn about the people that were involved either in the Kabbalah or that period of time or the tarot itself. So I started to read either their works, like D.N. Fortune, I've read most of her books, and or biographies. One of my favorite biographies is a very short biography I came across maybe 10 years ago, I think. It's called Aleister Crowley and D.N. Fortune, The Logos of the Aeon and the Shakti of the Age by Alan Richardson. Not a very long biography, but it shows... I think it shows an interesting relationship between D.N. Fortune and Aleister Crowley. They were actually more friends than people realize. And also, after I read that biography, I was so impressed by what he said about D.N. Fortune, because I'd already been impressed by Aleister Crowley and was reading him, that I went to study her more deeply. He really puts her in a really great light in terms of influence. So I found sort of digging into their lives, the people, whether it's Aleister Crowley or Pamela Coleman Smith, or even some of the Golden Dawn people like Florence Farr, that again, you're honoring this lineage that is an absolute, I would say, unarguable fact that the tarot has this lineage. And that's why I get really kind of upset when people say, oh, you just read the cards. And I just say, what do you mean? I mean, it's like, I studied the universe through tarot. I mean, it's like, tarot has been shortchanged in terms of what it can really bring to the table, even if you don't want to use it for prediction. The idea that I think that's why it's so popular is we get a sense that it is talking about something much more than you might think. And as I said, once you start looking at Kabbalah with it, it really blows your mind, and it's just endless. In fact, it's endless what you can read as a result of studying it. So basically, I would say what's fun is to find books that support your interests. Maybe an approach which would be completely legitimate is to study the art, going from maybe certain periods to other periods. And I've meant to do that because even if you look at different cards, it's really interesting to see the evolution of a card. And again, it sort of makes you think like, why did, you know, why has that changed? Do I agree with that? You know, it's fun to look at that. I mean, the death card itself went from a very primitive Grim Reaper to, you know, what you see in Aleister Crowley's, this beautiful, complicated image that has sexual imagery in it and other things besides a skeleton. So, or you have the skeleton on the horseback was, you know, the horses added. So you start to think, well, how is, what does it mean? And why did they do that during that period of time? And again, it's that idea that it will deepen your connection to the tarot. It was really fun going through this question because I went back to some very old books that I kept, but I'd forgotten I had read, and I wanted to reread some of them. One was The Thursday Night Tarot by Jason Lauterhand. He was probably the first tarot book I read that was Kabbalistic because I read that very early on. And basically, he used to give these weekly talks on the major arcana at Fort Main Cultural Center in San Francisco. And I think he started in 1950. And I just liked his view of things. And he has a very down-to-earth conversational style with really complicated things. And so I remember getting a very good feeling about Lauterhand, even if I didn't agree with it at the time. And also, I didn't know any Kabbalah at the time. So I thought, maybe I'll go back and take a look at this book. I would recommend that book because I liked it. I got, if nothing else, you get some wisdom from his insights about life because he includes very, I guess, mundane things, which you would think of a spiritual teacher is able to address both the esoteric and the mundane. So, those are just some of the books. I'm going to see if there's anything I left out that's really going to make me upset if I don't mention it in terms of books. Oh, yeah, this one. Rhapsodies of the Bazaar, the Tarot Essays of Anton Court de Gebelin and M. Le Comte de Millet, translated by J. Carlin. It is out of print now, but it's the only one I found that's translated the two pivotal essays in tarot written in the late 1700s. It's in French. You can get it in French, but it's a really cool, they're really cool essays and some very interesting things in it. But also you get the sense of where some things originated in terms of the esoteric view, including the idea that basically the tarot itself is the Thoth's book, you know, so it's the hermetic book. So it's like, that's what it is. And that's, it goes back to Egyptian times, which they haven't been able to prove, but was completely embraced by the metaphysical world and the occult world. And at this point, you know, is somehow included in it, even though it's not historically correct. The other thing I wanted to mention before I finish this brief answer to my question brief, and that you probably could add a lot more books to this, is that what I found is the more I deepen my relationship with the tarot, I start getting things from it that are not related to anything I've learned, including the presence of what I feel is some kind of teacher, divine teacher, whether it's Thoth or Horus, I don't know. And also you start to get a connection to the lineage itself. Maybe I'll keep my stories about that, which are really interesting, I think, to another show, which again, I did not expect to get. You start really being able to communicate with the lineage itself. And I think if you don't study the tarot, if you don't approach it with sort of a genuine curiosity, I think you miss out on so much that the tarot brings to the table. So that's mainly what I want to, I guess, say and to get you excited about. And this was my approach, but certainly it's just to get you thinking about how you might approach the tarot and get to know it in the way I have. And it's become such a dear friend and a great teacher. So thank you for tuning in and thank you all for listening. There was also Quasar Rose. Thank you for listening in. And Mark Coates, I appreciate it. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a great week.